Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
How might this nation change under a predominantly conservative Supreme Court? Well, unless you're a billionaire, you may not like the way it turns out. We'll talk about that right now on The Voice of Reason.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts for today's program, Ed Golly and Joe Reinhardt.
Before we start, I would like to note that our guest last week, Kent Bailey, who's chair of the local Sierra Club, filled our program for an hour talking about the climate emergency. And I remember he seemed really a little more distressed about it than I've ever seen him. It's as if he's perfectly well aware that we're beyond the point of no return. Well, regrettably, we need to report that Kent died on Sunday. So that was the last time he's probably ever made a public statement. And if you want to hear that program, it's archived here on WTAN. You can go just to the WTAN website. You'll find the program guide, select our program, The Voice of Reason, and you can pick up the podcast from last week. It was really an excellent program. Joe and I basically let him just tell us his appraisal of the situation on the entire program, and I think it's well worth listening to. So that would be the program from September 17th. Well, Joe, the Supreme Court will almost certainly become packed with a significant number of conservative judges, and because the Republicans representing the U.S. Senate haven't an ounce of integrity as far as I'm concerned. And while conservatives might rejoice, I think we might take a look at how America might evolve over the next decade, starting in maybe a couple of months with the Affordable Care Act, which will probably finally be repealed. Now, Trump has been telling us since he was on the campaign trail that he had a better program that would afford better care at lower prices and cover pre-existing conditions, in spite of the fact that he's in court today and has been for months trying to get rid of the pre-existing conditions coverage. Every month he tells us 2 weeks later he's going to have bring out this plan and present it to the country, and yet we never seem to hear it.
He's been saying that for 2 years, but in fact, so I hear on the news, but in fact he's been saying it for 4 years. I can recall that one of the first words out of his mouth after his election was promising to roll out this great health care plan within 30 days of his inauguration. So he's been telling that lie since day one, and there are at least four or five iterations of it on tape where he's actually been recorded saying it.
And remember that nearly 2 million Floridians rely on the Affordable Care Act for their health insurance. They'll lose it overnight. And of course, for pre-existing conditions, it's pretty much a death warrant, because he has no idea how to even comprehend the complexity of health care in this country. And there's really only effectively one way to achieve what he claims he can achieve, and that's to convert to Medicare for all, which he isn't about to do because he sees that as some form of socialism, even though every other Western civilization, every other industrial nation, without any exception, can seem to do it.
You know, it would be a crime, Ed, if everyone in this country, rich or poor, including people who don't deserve it, were entitled to good health care. I couldn't stand for that myself, personally. I think I'd have to go to the doctor.
Well, that's more likely than not going to be the first major change in the American landscape from the new court. And I think it's going to be devastating, because if he wins re-election, he doesn't even need to make the commitment anymore. He just won't talk about it. And Americans will go with a lot, to a great extent, maybe 20 to 40 million Americans simply won't have access to health care. And, conservatives tell us, we have the greatest health care system
right now that don't have access to
We have the greatest health care system in the world, they boast. But I think wouldn't you rather live in the country with the second best health care if you knew you had access to it? Because what good does the greatest health care system do when 30 million people can't access it?
In which a large number of people who are now unemployed and had their health insurance through their employer will be uninsured as well. So that number figures to swell substantially, even without the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. I do want to say quickly one thing in Trump's defense, and that has to do with the COVID-19. Frankly, he's had his ups and downs. It appears to be a second wave. It's spiking again. But under his masterful leadership, and I did check this, it's true, he has managed to get the death rate down to one per person.
That's nice. Yeah. So he's successful. I can't see why he'd boast about that. Mm-hmm. Right after the Second World War, the Republicans attempted to repeal the Social Security Act and have wanted to get rid of it ever since. I've kind of thought this through to figure out why they're so opposed to it. Well, and they still are, and I see them putting into motion the process of essentially starving the beast by implementing these payroll tax cuts for the Americans who are still working, whose income and jobs have not been affected by the coronavirus. It makes no sense that they need some kind of a tax break if they're still working. The people that need the help are the people that lost the job. So why are they doing this? Well, I think we all know that American business has been evolving into what you might call mega retailers, as the smaller stores are all converted into one giant store. So, for example, in the 60s, if you wanted lumber, you went to a lumber store. If you wanted plants, you went to a plant store. If you wanted nails, you went to a hardware store. And if you wanted appliances, you went to an appliance store. Now you go to a big box store, and everything's there under one roof. So, as we all know, the smaller businesses are if they can survive, are just struggling to do that.
You really can't appreciate how severe that is until you get off the interstate. Long before the shutdown, I mean, several years ago, you drive through many towns, particularly in Texas, and everything's boarded up except the Mission and the pawn shop. They're doing business, and the liquor store is open, and one bar. Everything else, and at the edge of town is a brand new Walmart or a Target,
right,
or some such
store.
And I call it being Walmarted, where everyone who's been there for generations is literally driven to the wall, driven out of business, and went from being a self-supporting, independent businessman to a greeter.
Well, I decided to crunch the numbers a little bit to help the audience understand this. So let's suppose you're running one of these big box stores here in Florida, and you've got a lot of stores all over the state. And just for this simplicity of rounding off numbers, let's suppose you have 5,000 employees statewide. Now, even if you're paying them near minimum wage, let's figure an average pay of $500 a week for full-time employees. And remember, it's not just the clerks, right? But you've got the store managers, you've got the people that need to mow the parking lot and wash the windows and sweep the floors at night and so on. So you've got a lot of people that need to be on the payroll to run these operations, right? So I figure an average of $500 a week, that's about $1,250 an hour. That comes to a payroll of $2.5 million every week to pay these people. Now, Social Security needs to be matched by the employer. I understand it's 6.2%. I thought it was 7.5%. I haven't dealt with it for a long time. But using the 6.2% figure, that means that the company needs to write a check to the Social Security Administration for $155,000 every week. And when you add that up times 52, you're looking at over $8 million in a year. And in a decade, $80 million. Now, wouldn't the CEO and the board of directors of one of these box companies decide we'd rather have that on our profit and loss statement and be able to pay it out as dividends to the stockholders? Because you know if Social Security gets repealed, they aren't going to raise the employees' wages by 6.2%. They're keeping that money for them, right? And what do they care what happens to their employees when they retire? They don't care if they got to go live with their adult children in a garage apartment or in the basement or whatever. They couldn't care less. They just would rather have that money in their coffer as profit. We saw when the tax cuts came in for American corporations, that didn't translate to increased wages for the employees at all. Yeah. Labor is still an expense that they want to keep as low as possible. So that is what it's behind this idea of getting rid of Social Security and let the government take care of the retirement through Section 8 housing or food stamps or welfare payments or whatever. They don't care. Social Security is estimated to run out of money in 2032. Now, there's multiple ways they could fix it. Higher tax rates, taxes on higher limits of wages, benefit reductions, raises in the minimum age, which is currently 62, to receive Social Security, increases in full retirement age for future retirees, and a reduction or even the elimination of Social Security benefits for those people that have just too much income after they've retired. Put clearly to the corporations, the best move is get rid of it altogether and be done with it. So by now, think with me. A lot of people have lost their jobs. They aren't contributing to the Social Security system every week, right? Because they don't have a paycheck. Meanwhile, the number of retirees who are collecting the benefits, or children of deceased parents or people with disabilities, stays the same. It's a relative constant. So now the government can come to us and say, gee, we just aren't getting enough funding to keep this system going. We're going to need to repeal the system, right? Plus, add to that now the tax cut every week, so that they're not, even the working people aren't contributing to the system. And what happens? You starve the beast and shut down the program.
Sure. When they started out, the pyramid was that was inverted. There were lots of younger people working and very mm-hmm. few people older, because people didn't live as long. Now all the baby boomers are my age or older, and so the pyramid has turned the other way around. Luckily, I think our great and perfect president has come up with a solution to the old people problem, and that, of course, is COVID-19.
Yeah, just lay them out on the street.
So that'll save Social Security for the rest of us.
Sure, and when you get rid of their insurance, right, the Affordable Care Act, they can't even check into the hospital.
That's right.
Right? Unless they bring cash.
Just leave them outside.
The pink slip to their
car. Leave them outside
right?
at night, and your problems will all be solved.
What else do you think might happen, Joe?
You mean without Social Security?
No, with a oh, right-leaning Supreme Court.
Oh, I see. Well, as you can see, I'm in black in mourning for that very event, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Well, the minimum wage will remain stagnant, below any living wage. That way, taxpayers will continue to supplement low-wage earners by having to provide various benefits like food stamps and housing, Section 8, and other types of welfare, which translates into taxpayers supporting the billionaires who get to keep all that money and by underpaying their employees. I like to hearken back to Henry Ford. People, their heads exploded. They thought the world was coming to an end when he raised these wages of his employees to $5 an hour. And the consequence of that was they could all go out and buy a Ford. Mm-hmm. And now we have 350 million cars on the road. They're not hard to find.
Yeah.
And our prosperity as a group, what do you know, a rising tide lifted all of those boats, not the trickle-down type of tide.
Yeah.
Raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, the scare talk is, well, you know, people hire fewer people, and all of the underskilled people will be out of work, and the push for robots will go right through the roof. All of those things are already happening, so they're not really an increase in the problem. What will happen is people will have more money to spend, which will benefit the economy. It will trickle up, as it always does, and we'll need to come out of our pockets with less money in order to support people who, in spite of the fact that they work 50 hours a week, still need food stamps to feed a family of five.
But see, I think that's one of those urban legends about why he raised the pay scale. Because remember, cars were being sold all over the country. His market wasn't limited to Detroit, where his workers are. You could buy a Ford in Buffalo, New York, or Los Angeles.
That's a metaphor, I think, more than that.
I think that, my understanding is that the reason he raised the rates is because the work was so abysmally boring that the workers' brains were turning into Munster cheese, sitting there just doing the same thing over and over, and that was not part of the American work ethic at that time, right? It's a structure of how people made a living. And so a lot of times he'd have an employee that after one day just said, I can't do this again tomorrow. And so now he's got to hire and train a new employee. But by paying him more money, that was the incentive to continue to do the work.
His HR costs went way down.
And as we learned from Paul and Tracy earlier this week, Ford didn't introduce the auto. Auto or the industry to the country, he came up with the assembly line construction idea that could produce them in mass, and that's where his success was. What I think is that essentially the objective of the Republican Party is to turn this nation entirely over to the major corporations. They do this by dangling the shiny object in front of the voter of either religion or racism, right? We're going to keep the Mexicans out, or we're going to impose your religion on the culture through the government. So that's how they get the vote from the working class people. But their objective is never to make the working class person's life better, because it's been stagnant from 1977 up until 2014. They really had no improvement in the standard of living, even though the stock market kept going up and the rich kept getting a larger share of the nation's wealth and did not trickle it down. So what they want to do now is eliminate protections for employees and consumers and destroy the environment for profit. The Supreme Court now will be there to help them do this, to be able to pass these laws over the objections of the environmentalists or the consumer protection people. Remember when we bought our dog food from China, what happened? The dogs died because they were poisoned. When we bought our drywall from China, what happened? The house is so full of mold, you got to...
We died.
Because they don't have the regulations. So what do? We label these regulations job-killing implements to business, but it's a darn good thing we have them, because we don't need to worry about the dog or us dying when we buy food. But the corporations don't care. They want the profits, so let's get rid of the regulations and increase the profits. And the Republican voters playing right into their hands, and they don't know it. They can't figure it out.
And we thought we had learned this lesson with Upton Sinclair when he wrote about the meatpacking plants. The jungle. He wrote about the meatpacking plants in Chicago and gave us the Food and Drug Administration, all kinds of other federal actions that kept people from being poisoned. Mm-hmm. They're still poisoned to this day, but not to the extent that they were, of course. But it's because of people like him that when you buy a house, you can have a reasonable certainty that the guy next door is not going to build a rendering plant next door to you.
Yeah, precisely. Think about this. How many working class people making an average wage in America today, say $50,000, will write a $10,000 check to Marco Rubio's reelection campaign? By the time you take their deductions out of over a quarter of their annual income, they can't afford it. They could send him $10. He doesn't even acknowledge that, doesn't buy his lunch. But how many corporations can do it, right?
Oh, yeah.
The bigger the corporation, the bigger profit they have, they do it routinely. So where is Rubio's interest? It's with the NRA if they send him enough money. It's with Pfizer Pharmaceuticals if they send him enough money. And that's the whole structure of the Republican Party, is to create an environment where the corporate profits can increase at the expense of the working class, and to hell with the poor people. We don't even want to talk about them. We don't even want to see them.
Yeah, now,
send them south.
Now you can't even have class action lawsuits.
Exactly.
Where hundreds or thousands of people have suffered. And they're just out of luck, basically.
And if they Yeah, if they bring these lawsuits and lose, then the government is going to charge them all the legal fees so that it discourages you from even trying to get justice in the courts anymore. Close the justice. Post office, we see what DeJoy is doing to that. My weekly magazines used to show up on Saturday. Now they come Tuesday, right? He's successfully slowing it down. Well, the post office, like any government service, is a service of the government, whether it's the, you know, the people that mow the interstate or the public school system or the air traffic control system. They're not there to make a profit for the government. They're there to serve the public. We all pay for it. And the post office is the same, but they're treating it like it's a business and needs to make a profit. And when it doesn't, then we need to privatize it. So if DeJoy makes 1 cent on every letter that goes through the post office in a year, he'll be richer than Jeff Bezos in a month.
It's almost as if they have a bar graph as to which agencies have the largest budget or are producing the most income, the prisons, the schools, the post office, Social Security, and things of that nature. And they go down the bar graph and say, well, let's do this one. And so now it's easy. It's like the computer just tells them, here's the ones you want to privatize. Ta-da!
Well, we see firsthand that voter suppression remains alive and well in Florida, with DeSantis trying to keep as many Democrats from voting as he possibly can.
They're going to sue Bloomberg. They are investigating him now for tampering.
They consider getting people to the polls tampering.
Right.
It's unbelievable. So, of course, if this is protected by a right-leaning Supreme Court, even though we're one of only four states that still employs Jim Crow laws, it's going to start expanding through the South because each state will be able to start to implement it. And if these cases are go to federal courts and lose and then are appealed to the Supreme Court, the majority of justices will take it in and say, yeah, this doesn't violate the Constitution.
Did you see the list of things that are included in this bill about protesters, about blocking traffic?
Yes. You're talking about the state, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
that he's trying to get through.
Yeah. I'm just standing on the street corner, and I get arrested because there are a bunch of protesters, Don't arrest me. I'm just the piano player. But it doesn't matter. With this concoction, you can get whisked away. And again, you might not get convicted, but any lawyer will tell you, we can get you off even if it takes 40 years.
Yes. All right, let's try one or two more things. I think minority rights will be severely curtailed now. I mean, same-sex marriage is now considered settled law, so there's probably not going to be a challenge to that.
So is Roe v. Wade.
Exactly. But, well, we're going to get into that in a few minutes with our guest,
who's
going to talk to us about what's going to happen to women's rights. But with respect to LGBTQ rights in employment and housing, the cake baker incident, I think these are going to start coming back into the courts, and that the court will be sympathetic to suppression against those people, because we don't, we're evolving a culture that, as we know, is highly divided. And so we're going to look at people who don't fit into the textbook mold of the Partridge family or the Cleaver family and say, well, you don't get the same rights as everybody else. We don't even want you here. Right. And we'll use the courts to oppress you. If Trump stays in the White House, even if Clarence Thomas doesn't make it another 4 years, he's not going to be replaced by a progressive judge. And if the Republicans retain control of the Senate and Biden ends up in the White House, their position is going to be, even if Clarence Thomas had to retire 2 months into his administration, well, we're going to let the American people decide, so we're going to wait until a Republican president gets back in.
They have
no ethics, no morality of any kind. They don't care about the Constitution, the spirit of it, or anything. Go ahead,
no,
Joe.
The woman that is the at the top of the list, I can't think of her name off right now, but she's a Catholic. Mm-hmm. And that will make, I'm not sure, 7 or 8 Catholics on the Supreme Court. That's real representative. And no Protestants at all. There may still be one Jew, and I think it will be up to 8 Catholics. One of them was a Catholic, but he became an Episcopalian, which is a rich Catholic, and a very liberal Catholic as well.
Okay, 10:30 here on the Voice of Reason, the Tan Talk Radio Network. And if you were supposed to be there at 10:15, you're late. Quick break. Let's hear about some of the other good programs here on WTAN, and then we will continue with the Voice of Reason.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, did you know there's a live psychology talk show Thursday and Friday at noon where you can call in and get free guidance and also learn several different topics relating to ending the stigma on mental health? It's called Moments of Clarity on WTAN 1340 AM. It's with licensed therapist Tiffany Warner, who will try to end the stigma on mental health. But the only way you can do that is to listen to Moments of Clarity Thursday and Friday at noon on WTAN 1340 AM, the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Joining us now is Amy Weintraub from Progressive Florida, a nonprofit organization that's headquartered in downtown St. Pete. And Amy, we want to toss it to you now to hear what you think can be the most, or will, is likely to be the most catastrophic aspect of a heavily right-wing leaning Supreme Court and federal judiciary.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We are bracing ourselves for the overturning or the gutting of Roe v. Wade. And by we, I mean the reproductive rights and the women's rights movement, for sure. You know, Trump, even back in his campaign, he said that he was going to exhibit unqualified support for abortion, the overturning of abortion rights. And he said at that time that he was going to choose justices who were going to dismantle Roe v. Wade. And so now he has a third opportunity to fill a seat on the Supreme Court. And so we definitely are aware that this has way more import than it hasn't even with the previous two appointments, and that we do feel that this is the greatest threat to reproductive rights in more than a generation, and probably multiple generations.
Well, of course, the judges themselves can't bring the case. So my perception of what would happen is that some of these red states like Mississippi or Alabama, Louisiana, will start to impose such heavy restrictions on the Planned Parenthood clinics or any abortion clinic that they literally make it cost ineffective to operate them. And even though federal courts have protected them and may still continue to do so, the appeals will be heard in the Supreme Court that will then determine that, no, this doesn't violate the Constitution in any way. They can put any imposition they want on these facilities so that they don't literally need to overturn this law, but they make it impossible for women to obtain the kind of health care and services that they need. Wouldn't that be the scenario for how they would do it?
That is certainly one scenario. Right now there are 17 cases involving state level abortion restrictions that are pending in federal court. Wow. They're all just one step away from the Supreme Court as we speak. And it's conceivable that, I mean, and what you're talking about then is not a complete overturn, but what we call the gutting. It guts Roe. Wow. It makes it such that states can implement laws that basically deprive their residents of abortion care because the actual facilities are no longer able to operate. But also, I'll just point out that we have many states that have passed pretty much all out abortion bans. And that's different than the types of, you know, hard regulations on the providers. This is actual bans. Some of them have been, the bans include outlawing abortion as little as 6 weeks into the pregnancy, and that's before many women know that they're even pregnant. Mm-hmm. And you know, all of these bans that have passed, there are 8 of them so far, have been temporarily blocked by judges, but that will all change if those cases are pursued to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And then that would tie into probably the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Well, it could. I mean, the ERA, if the ERA were actually to be ratified, or, you know, it already has hit its number of states, but if the lawsuit that's currently pending that says that the time restriction that Congress imposed was unconstitutional, and now that the number of states ratifying has been met as required for an amendment, if the ERA would pass, there is an argument that it would extend to women being able to access abortion. That would be a different law. We would then be able to count on that law and not on Roe to protect abortion rights. It's a separate legal issue, but it could. I mean, it certainly will help. It certainly will help. But one of the things that I think people want to understand is that if Roe falls or is gutted terribly, then what happens is that the state then, whatever the law of the state is what matters. And we know that that means in many states, people will lose abortion rights. And you ask 4 questions when you're considering this. When you're considering what the status of abortion law will be in a particular state, does the state protect abortion apart from Roe in its constitution or in its statutes? And we would argue that in Florida, it is protected because of our privacy clause in our state constitution. And up until this current state, Florida State Supreme Court, we would know state Supreme Court would back us on that. They ruled repeatedly that the privacy clause in our Florida state constitution protects abortion access. But you might also ask, in other states, on the other hand, does the state already have an abortion ban in place, which many states do? And the only Roe is keeping them from enacting that ban.
What about
you can also ask, go ahead.
What about if my wife goes to a gynecologist or whatever, and he says, well, I'm afraid you're going to need a DNC, which has the same effect. So if you can afford that, rather than getting an abortion, you still end up without a fetus. Is that not a workaround to the problem, or was not that the workaround before Roe v. Wade?
There are so many restrictions on the abortion procedure that a general practitioner or family doctor or a gynecologist who certainly would have the skills to be able to empty a uterus, through DNC or through suction or whatever, they're very unlikely to do that because they would then need to say they would need to report it to the state. There's so many reporting guidelines. They're actually reporting requirements to the state when you have performed an abortion, and it opens them up. That's a public record. It opens them up to, you know, our opposition targeting them for abuse and so forth. So most family docs, OBGYNs in private practice do not perform abortion.
What about traveling to another state?
Traveling to a state that provides abortion will be an option for people who have the resources to do that. But I just, you know, most people who access abortion are not people with a lot of resources.
They're poor.
So that is going to be a big problem, and it will be a barrier to them accessing care.
Yeah, some sorts of underground railroads would possibly be set up, funded by wealthy people who sympathize with the plight of the poor people to get them to either other states or even into Mexico or Canada. Where couldn't clinics be set up right across the border in the border towns?
Well, actually, there's actually even a better way than all of this. And that is self-managing abortion, using abortion pills. This has become a much more popular way of ending a pregnancy. And there are online pharmacies that are operating internationally You know, many people get drugs from all over the world now, and you can order online abortion medication that can be shipped directly to you. And there are online pharmacies and online medical practices even that you can get the same drug that you would get if you went to your local abortion provider. But very, very important that people who are accessing the medication this way have the proper instructions, and that they're using it in the early weeks of pregnancy. Only up to the first 12 weeks is it really safe and effective if you're trying to manage it on your own. And in my opinion, if Roe is gutted or overturned and in places where abortion's really hard to get, that will be the method. We no longer will have to turn to back alley abortions or the, heaven forbid, the coat hanger. This new and awesome medication will be able to allow women to manage their abortions on their own terms.
Do you see any scenario whereby federal law could expand to prohibit abortion nationally?
That would be, I think that would be, you're talking about like Congress passing a law similar to the abortion ban. I see that as almost impossible. The public opinion shows such strong support for people having access to abortion care if they need it. We did a poll, Progress Florida, along with Florida Watch, did a poll just this month. And it was conducted from the 14th to the 20th. So that was last week. And we found in Florida, 57% of Floridians believe that abortion should be legal. And this was among likely voters. And among Democrats, of course, 82% believe that abortion should be legal in most cases, versus Republicans, only 32% felt that way. But overall, it was still 57%. And that's been a pretty Republican. Florida's not a Republican state. I didn't mean to say that, but we do vote conservative as often as we don't. And our current U.S. senators are Republicans. So even in a state like that, we still have broad support for abortion. So it's difficult for me to imagine Congress ever passing that.
Well, now that you brought it up, tell us a little bit about Progress Florida and what that organization is all about and how you fit into it.
Oh, sure. Well, we have been around for about 12 years. We were founded in 2008, and we are advocates pushing for progressive policies and holding our elected officials accountable. And we work on a lot of different social justice issues and other issues, including like economic fairness and public education, health care, environment, and reproductive freedom, which is my job. I specifically work on building a stronger reproductive rights movement around throughout our state and winning advances in reproductive health and access and defending against attacks on those rights that we've already won. And I work to try to identify people who are interested in the movement and who want reproductive rights to stay the law of the land and get them further educated and activated.
Joe, you had a question?
Well, I noticed that there probably would be severe penalties proposed for doctors or whomever. You don't have to be a doctor to perform an abortion. I think it was Gloria Steinem who some years ago posed the question to an abortion advocate about their daughter, which is, let's suppose that your daughter had an abortion. How many years do you think she should spend in prison?
Yes, exactly.
Turnabout is fair play, isn't it? If I go to buy drugs, they arrest us both, you know, illegal drugs. They would arrest us both. So if I go to have an abortion, and certainly we're both committing a crime. It may be consensual, but it's not victimless.
Oh, exactly. And because of the optics involved with criminalizing the actual patient, you'll see in most of these draconian state laws, abortion bans that have been passed, the sanctions are all on the physician now. We don't usually see the patient being the one who is criminalized, but the penalties for the physicians are extreme in many of these anti-abortion laws. And yet that's another reason where it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where many, except for the bravest family doc, their OBGYN, would go ahead and provide the abortion care.
And we've seen since the 60s that when we make the ingestion of hallucinogenic drugs illegal, nobody ever uses them, right? So, of course, if we overturn Roe Wade, all these women are going to behave, and they're going to have all these children that they don't want or can't afford or aren't prepared for. If little 14-year-old Wanda gets raped by her Uncle Billy Bob, she's expected to have and rear this child. By lowering taxes, there will be plenty of social funds available for through food stamps and Section 8 housing to rear the kid that she doesn't want, right? I just can't get my mind around how conservatives process this. I presume it's primarily the religious right that's behind these movements, thinking that they're somehow supporting some biblical mandates that don't actually exist in the Bible, but that for some reason abortion is something that their religion opposes, and therefore they should impose that restriction on all of us. Can you talk to that just a little bit?
Well, I mean, it does feel absurd when they get fixated on this one issue area that has to do with sex and that has to do with a woman being able to decide what her destiny is and whether or not she wants to stay pregnant and whether or not she wants to parent. And it is very bizarre that to me that is what they fixate on. And instead of all the other issues that you just alluded to, housing, healthcare, early education, universal child care, things that would really uplift the children and the women and the families of America, the things that if you are living the social gospel of Jesus, or if you are in sync with the current Pope and his social justice narrative, you are going to be really concentrating on not the control of a woman in a very specific time in her life when she is, when she's deciding whether or not to continue a pregnancy. I mean, I have to agree with you on all of those points.
Well, religions, all of them, so far as I know, really only have one business, and it isn't fighting sin. It's raising money. That's what they do for a living, is they raise money. And in order to raise money, you have to have a cause. You have to wave the bloody shirt, as they say. And what better cause has it turned out to be than abortion? Saving the lives of poor, unborn zygotes is just... hundreds of billions of dollars have been raised for that cause, and I have said in the past that if they ever overturn Roe v. Wade, it'll be the worst thing to happen to fundamentalists and evangelicals, since the invention of the devil.
Bizarrely, along that money trail that you're talking about, here in Florida, we have this very very strange phenomena of these anti-abortion pregnancy centers. We have over 190 of them, and they're these centers that are in almost every county, and they set themselves up to look like they are women's health care providers, but they're actually, their mission is to trick women into coming in and then talk them out of getting abortion. Mm-hmm. And they name themselves things like Choices and Women's Health and things like this. You know that our legislature is funding these places $4 million a year.
Wow.
Is being streamlined to about half of them. It is definitely, somebody's getting some money off of this, and it's not
when you
actual
buy,
women's healthcare.
When you used to pay for a vanity license plate that said save life, that money went to these abortion centers that you're talking about.
And they still do.
Exists. Well, that's what they're in business to do, is to raise money. They don't produce anything.
The state legislature's funding them. They sell fear and trickery and just sometimes outright
nothing
lies.
Concrete.
No. In fact, the part of the $4 million that comes out of our state budget, not including the license plate sales, that's a different line item. The $4 million that straight taxpayer funds, that goes to so-called counseling. And this is basically church ladies shaming women who thought they were coming in to talk about abortion, shaming them into, you know, agreeing not to have an abortion.
That's remarkable. Well, you're listening to Amy Weintraub from Progress, Florida here on The Voice of Reason. And Amy, is your organization then is funded how?
We are a nonprofit, so we are funded totally by donations from individuals who support a progressive future. And, you know, of course, we apply for foundation grants and things like that. But we are a charitable organization, Progress Florida Education Institute.
Okay, and you can be found very easily by just doing an internet search for Progress Florida. You're in St. Petersburg,
yep.
Right?
And yep, progressflorida.org. And we do operate statewide. Two of our staff happen to live here in St. Pete, but we have folks all over.
Okay. So it's fair to say you're a lobbyist organization. I know that's supposed to be an ugly word in our culture. People hate lobbyists. I don't know why. That's how you talk to your government.
Well, it's true, but there are regulations that go with being a lobbyist. None of us are lobbyists. Like, I'm not a registered lobbyist. I have been in the past when I worked with other organizations. We call ourselves an advocacy organization.
Okay. All right, very good. So any of our listeners can read more about your aims and objectives by going to your website and see those of you who are involved with it. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners today about how you see things shaping up in this country with the courts and the election?
Absolutely. I'll just mention that our website is progressflorida.org. But we also operate, and we don't operate, we help lead the coalition of reproductive rights organizations across the state, which is 60 organizations. And it includes some usual suspects like Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, but it also includes the Interfaith Council on Social Concerns and various labor unions and some other folks that you might be surprised by. And it's called the Floridians for Reproductive Freedom. Individuals and other groups are always welcome, and you can find us at floridareprofreedom.org, and that's also linked from Progress Florida's website. You all were talking a little bit earlier about I think we were talking about specific people that we know that Trump is considering. I think you were in the first half of the show.
Right.
And you mentioned Amy Comey Barrett, and, the fact that she is Catholic, it is kind of bizarre that, like, a lot of times when you read about her, it'll say Amy Comey Barrett, a Catholic. And the fact is, Joe Biden is a Catholic. And there are lots of wonderful, wonderful Catholic leaders who have done amazing things for us as social concerns and for America at large. Amy Comey Barrett is a member of a very specific sect in the Catholic faith that is the most conservative when it comes to things like the way families are structured. And that makes us very, very nervous. Further, she was a clerk for Scalia. That was her first thing she did out of law school. And so that's important to think about, that her number one mentor was someone who was an arch conservative and extremely anti-abortion. So her situation is much more complex than her just being a Catholic, if you know what I mean.
Well, you're not hinting that she might want to take action on marriage laws or maybe same-sex marriage laws?
I don't know. I mean, as much as Roe is settled law, I think any new state law that tests any of the gains that we've made are at risk with another arch conservative on the bench. And we've also got to consider how young she is. She's in her 40s, right? I believe even early 40s. She could be on the bench for another 40 years. This will affect a whole nother generation. Many people who aren't even born yet will be impacted by her position.
Well, I would suggest anybody born in this century, especially a female, is going to be affected by this court.
And people born into low-income families are going to be affected by this court.
Mm-hmm. Attorney General William Barr, whom I'm sure you admire wholesomely, said Wednesday that he believes the American public has misrepresented the actual meaning of separation of church and state when he gave a speech at the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. And here's what he said. I'm going to quote him. Militant secularists, that's anybody who recognizes the Constitution for what it is, right? You're a militant secularist now. They have long seized on that slogan as a facile justification for attempting to drive religion from the public square and to exclude religious people from bringing a religious perspective to bear on conversations about the common good. But this is really what got my attention. He said he believes that, quote, traditional morality, unquote, has diminished to be replaced by people who are actively hostile in advocating for the separation of church and state, threatening core principles in the country's democracy. Joe and I kind of wondered if his definition of traditional morality includes bearing false witness, pathologically, adultery, stealing, bribery, narcissism, having five children by three different wives, coveting, hubris. I mean, this guy works for the president that represent the exact opposite of these values and doesn't seem to be catching on, does he?
This works for a guy who could actually break all Ten Commandments in one day.
I mean, this is right back to Melania telling us that her big push as First Lady was going to be to address and try to reduce cyberbullying, apparently unaware that her husband is the most preeminent cyberbully in the world.
He made her quit.
I think if you made this stuff up in a novel, nobody'd bother to buy it and read it. That's just too absurd. Forget it. But I mean, that in spite of the fact that, wasn't it 2,000 current and former members of the Department of Justice signed a letter suggesting that he should resign, which he completely ignored? Yet that's exactly what he's telling us. We're going to impose religion on this country through the through our agencies, through the government. This is, I think, where they're really seeing their opportunity to jump in and do this, whether we like it or not. Even though it's a minority position, they just don't care.
Well, they're going to impose their religion, not religion in general.
Right.
They're going to impose their specific idea of what the religion is. And, of course, anytime you have people imposing their ideas on religion, lo and behold, there are lots of people who disagree with them violently.
I have to agree with you guys, and I it's hard not to take that type of reasoning personally. I consider myself, I mean, I've dedicated pretty much my whole adult life. I'm 52, and I've dedicated my career to helping people and to upholding values like respect and support and safety and affordability and making sure that Americans have the rights and freedoms and opportunities to control our lives and to find our destiny and to live a life that is as happy and healthy as it can be. And yet I'm being told that because I'm not religious, I'm not upholding morality. I'm not a moral person or I'm not a moral thinker. And it is extremely frustrating for me to hear that type of messaging coming from national leaders.
I know they make the argument that state church separation doesn't appear in the Constitution, and they're quite right. But on the other hand, the very first sentence of the very first one of our Bill of Rights says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And I just can't figure out what's so difficult for anybody to understand about that. Well, Amy Weintraub, we're out of time for today, and I really want to thank you for joining us and taking the time to tell us about your organization and your appraisal of the situation. ProgressFlorida.org is your site. Am I right?
That's right. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
You too. I'm going to leave us today with a quote from Alfred E. Newman. Election time is when the people learn what the politicians stand for and the politicians find out what the voters fall for. Up next, Patsy with a Y, Joy on Paper. And tomorrow morning at 10, Paul Molloy with Freedom Works, Trump Watches TV. Hope you'll join us again next Thursday on The Voice of Reason, along with Joe Reinhardt. I'm Ed Golly, reminding you, if the tweet seems a little too impossible to be true, don't believe it just because somebody tweeted it.
Make them prove it.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
AP News. Good morning. I'm Ed Donahue. When President Trump arrived at the Supreme Court to pay his respects to the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this was the reaction from the crowd. The president will announce Saturday his choice to replace Ginsburg on the high court. He wants the process to move quickly and said Judiciary Committee Chair Lindsey Graham in the Senate doesn't have to hold a hearing.
He's going to, I would think, but he wouldn't even actually have to hold one.
There is reaction to President Trump's answer to a question about a peaceful transfer of power.
Get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Joe Biden asked, what country are we in?
He says the most irrational things. I don't know what to say about it, but it does surprise me.
Lindsey Graham says if Republicans lose, they will accept the result. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of Joe Biden, he will accept that result. Crews are cleaning up downtown Louisville, Kentucky, after protest over no charges against three Louisville police officers for the shooting death of Breonna Taylor. Two police officers were shot and wounded overnight. 127 people were arrested. Benjamin Crump is the attorney representing Taylor's family.
What did the Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron present to the grand jury? Did he present any evidence for Breonna Taylor?
Crump was on NBC's Today Show. Cameron says the officers acted in self-defense. There were protests related to Taylor's death in Portland, Oregon overnight. The government says 870,000 people filed for unemployment last week, a slight increase. The government says sales of new homes rose by a very strong 4.8% last month. South Korea says North Korean troops shot and killed a South Korean government official who may have tried to defect and set his body on fire. This is AP News.
Moose is the German Shepherd and hasn't had any kind of health problems at all. He has been on Dynavite since he's a puppy.
DINOVITE.com.
We tell anybody that has a dog, if there was something that you could do right from the beginning so that you don't have expensive veterinary bills, why would you not do it? Get the Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Get some Dynavite. How happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
More time at home with family means more time to grill, and nothing tastes better off the grill than perfectly aged and tender Omaha steaks. The world's best steaks and all your other favorites are at omahasteaks.com. Enter DELISH in the search bar, and for this week, the Grill Out Favorites package comes with almost 2 additional pounds, 4 burgers, and 4 gourmet jumbo franks for free. You won't find a deal like this anywhere else. Visit omahasteaks.com and use keyword DELISH.
Wednesday, the Rays were looking for their third ever AL East championship. Tied at 2 in the sixth, Randy Arozarena broke the tie.
As there's a swing and a drive by Randy to center field and deep. Back at a Nimmo to the wall. It's gone! A 2-run home run by Randy Arozarena, and the Rays have regained the lead. It's 4-2 here in the sixth.
Tyler Glasnow is good for 6. Tampa Bay hit 4 homers, and Nick Anderson closed it out.
Now the right-hander ready, the 0-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out, and the Rays win. And for the third time in team history, the Tampa Bay Rays are the American League East champions.
And with that, the Rays have a division championship. They can rest on Thursday and take on the Phillies at home on Friday. With the Rays Report, I'm Neil Solons.
For information on the Rays, visit RaysBaseball.com.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge
is all. If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is Polly with the Brian Cash Claus Coupon Book.
The Brian Cash Claus Coupon Book is giving out free masks. Just call 727-804-6082. If you need a mask, we'll get it to you for free. There's our donation back to the community. The Brian Cash Claus Coupon Book. Free masks. 727-804-6082.